The Daily Connect Podcast.
And it's Thursday, the 20th of December. This is the Daily Connect Podcast. Thank you for downloading. Coming up, we are going to be hearing from one of the first blind baristas in South Africa. Also, we'll hear about a counsellor, a blind counsellor called Rosa Gomez, who decided to become a counsellor after getting support from RNIB. And we get a Christmas story from our listener, Giles. But first, we meet Julian Jackson, who completed a very special event this year, and that was the Big Blind Walk. Julian joins me on the line now to talk about it. Thank you for being here, Julian.
It's lovely to be with you again, Stephen. Thank you.
So tell us, for those who didn't hear about your story at first, what is it you did? What was the Big Blind Walk?
The Big Blind Walk was a walk from all the way from Land's End, which I started on the 29th of April this year, all the way up to John O'Groats, and I finished that on the 22nd of June. So it was a 55-day walk. And incredibly, Stephen, we had two afternoons of rain in those 55 days. So the weather was very kind to me and all my walking companions and guides. And yes, it was a huge experience and something I planned for about a year. I trained for it. And I think in retrospect, it was something that I'm so pleased to have completed relatively in one piece.
Relatively?
Yeah, relatively. My feet really suffered for the first month. Blisters and then open wounds. I was walking on bandages for quite a while. But it's quite incredible the way the human body reinvents itself. I mean, my toes change shape, my feet change shape slightly, but the end of the fifth week, I hit a sweet spot, if you like, and everything cleared up, and I just kept on going. I had a leg infection as well. It came up through the soles of my feet, but huge doses of antibiotics knocked that on the head. By the end of it, Stephen, I can tell you that the body, it's remarkable. I felt like I could walk 40 miles a day and not an average of 22 miles a day. So it was that level of physical exercise that took me to a place I'd never been before.
Who was with you?
My wife was driving the support vehicle, which was a 7.5-metre long motorhome.
Oh, nice.
So that was a new experience for her. And also we had some wonderful guides, old friends of mine, who were strung out throughout the country, meeting us at various prearranged points. And we had a massive tent, which we put up alongside the motorhome, which they lived in. But I also had people I called walking companions who popped up along the way. I had a tracker with me. And that was, I think, a really wonderful thing to have, because everybody felt really engaged. They could go on the website and track me and find out how fast I was walking, where I was stopping, where I was walking to and from. And the historical record, actually, of that tracker will be uploaded very shortly. So people can go to bigblindwalk.com and click on the route page. And I'm hoping that everybody out there will next year, you know, take a walk and in my footsteps and keep raising money for our research. So every 55 days of the walk will be there. People can have a look per day.
So yeah. You kind of alluded there. So, you know, I was going to ask you what you did it for, you know, because it's one thing doing it, which is an amazing feat, but why do it? And it's all for eye research, is it?
Yes, it is. I felt when I went totally blind in 2010 that eye research, well, certainly it was something I didn't know anything about. And I felt then that if I didn't know anything about it, then who else did? And I still believe it's the best kept secret in the UK, and it's certainly one of the most underfunded areas of medical research in the UK. So essentially I did the walk to raise awareness of the varied and many impacts of sight loss on people's lives, whether it's losing their independence or their mobility or their financial independence, their emotional well-being, and so on, and to get out there and raise money and to talk about the extraordinary work that scientists are doing on our behalf every day to prevent sight loss and treat eye disease and restore sight. And I feel, Stephen, looking back at this walk, that I've moved the debate on because of the huge amount of media coverage I've got from just everybody talking about the practical support for visually impaired and blind people, which I know is important, and I'm very grateful for the practical support I got when I went blind in 2010, but to move it on from that to also talking about eye research and seeing that as an equal partner to the practical support that everybody requires. And so I engaged every day with strangers who were just in who were just showing incredible kindness and goodwill and generosity towards me and the Big Blind Walk. And there was so much interest for eye research. They were curious to know more about what this science behind sight is. And so in a nutshell, I would say that sight loss certainly touches people, but eye research confuses people. So it does require an explanation. And what better way to do it than to actually get out there and talk to people about it?
Raising money, but also starting a great conversation. How much did you raise in the end, Julian?
We've just hit £40,000.
Oh, fantastic. And,
which is a good number.
Yeah.
And but I'm confident we'll get to around £50,000 in the next few weeks. And people can still donate. The fund is open till the 1st of October. So they just have to go to bigblindwalk.com and click on the donate page. And I'm really grateful for any donations. I've had donations as small as 50p all the way up to thousands of pounds from individuals. So, you know, any amount is really, really well worthwhile. My costs were covered by sponsorship on the walk. So everything else goes into that fund at the National Eye Research Centre based in Bristol.
Oh, fantastic. Julian, well done with the Big Blind Walk.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Stephen. Big Blind Cycle 2020 will be coming up, and I'll be launching that next.
I'll get on the treadmill and get prepared for it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Julian.
All right, Stephen. Take care.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, when you think about the types of jobs that blind people do, being a barista might not be one of them. But that has changed in South Africa, as we hear from the first blind barista there.
Hi, my name is Joseph Macheta. I'm the blind barista in South Africa, Vusa. I became a barista in 2014. Kaleidoscope were looking for someone they could train as their blind barista. So I got an opportunity and I was trained right in Cape Town by one of the best restaurants also in South Africa. My job, I'm making coffee. It's something that can be done mostly by sighted people. So for me, it was a challenge. But as a blind person, you know, when you come across the challenges, that's when you do best. And I had to run with the opportunity, and this is why today I'm still doing quite well. My machine is a manual machine, and therefore, when I run express into a cup, I have to count like 20 seconds, then I know that there's the right amount in the cup. So when it comes to frothing the milk also, I have to listen to what you call paper tearing sound, because a sighted person can see whether he's doing the right froth into a milk jar. So unfortunately, I didn't have any assistive device, but lately I've got what you call a level indicator, because we are experiencing a high volume of clients into the coffee shop. It's much bigger now and it's very busy. So it helps me, like when the waitresses are running up and down, then I can also point to a cup without spilling and using any assistive device, yes.
My name is Freddy Buerta, and I am the executive head of Lindiana Barista Coffee Shop. And yeah, naturally, we had to start looking out for a barista, someone we thought would be ideal for that purpose. And, well, Joseph came along. The moment we saw Joseph and the moment we started speaking to Joseph, we knew that he was the guy. You know, people like him. People love him. He's becoming a real celebrity. And now at this stage, we are so happy that we have Joseph, because he's now a pioneer. And we think many, many more will follow in his footsteps. We were partners with the Truth Coffee Shop in Cape Town, and they saw this as a challenge. Truth Coffee Shop was named as the number one coffee shop in the world. And Joseph was trained then by baristas who had the best experience in the world. And I think that was the reason behind Joseph's success. He's, on one side, his own attributes and so on, but on the other side, that he was trained by professionals and persons who wanted to prove to people that visually impaired persons can also do what sighted people can do. Joseph, he's already trained one other barista who was also blind and so on. And we would like to establish a sort of a barista academy here where other blind persons can be trained. So it is possible. Joseph has proved to all of us that this is an occupation that can be done by blind persons.
Oh, I enjoy a lot making coffee, especially, you know, the energy of the clients when they're flocking into the coffee shop, even though you cannot see them. And the good thing about it is that Kaleidoscope, actually, they gave me the opportunity to come up with our own blend, which is Blindiana Blend.
Yeah, I would like to invite everyone. Come on and say hello to Joseph. You will enjoy speaking to Joseph. And come and taste our own Kaleidoscope Blindiana Blend coffee.
I don't believe in something like when they don't believe in blind people and they think blind people cannot do what they can do. So I have proved that. But for me, it was not to prove to everyone. It was mainly to prove for myself that yes, I can, because I believe in myself more than anything. So I think if everyone can believe in themselves and then have a positive mindset all the time and be focused, not listening to the outside voice, anything is possible. They can achieve everything in life.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now, speaking of jobs that blind people can do, being a counsellor is another one. And we hear now from Rosa Gomez, who decided to become a counsellor after spending time with RNIB after she lost her sight. Rosa told us her story.
I am registered blind, I've no sight at all. I was introduced to the RNIB some years ago and I began to receive assistance such as the telephone counselling scheme, which was of enormous help. I got involved initially because before I was a very active person, politically active in my work. I was a manager, I worked in the refugee sector, I worked with my local community. So the thought I couldn't do all these things affected me profoundly. So I started to get involved, I wanted to be a voice, I wanted to do things, I wanted to be out there, I wanted to be seen and I wanted to help. I've always been a people's person. So being active in my community was paramount and that was my thing. As we would say back home, I was in my salsa then. That was very much me, and I could identify myself. And my sight was no longer an impediment. I was able to tap into my previous skills, into all the things I did. I had a life once more. When the RNIB organized this civic leadership program, I applied for it and I came along to that. And the CLP campaigning there was one of the things that encouraged me and gave me food for thought that I could do it all over again, that I could get politically involved and be a voice, not just the wider community, but in particularly the VI community and the disabled community in my area. Following the campaign run by the RNIB, I was very active in contacting my local authority when there were things that would enable me to walk safely, such as objects that were placed inadvertently on my way, but overhanging vegetation, walking on paths where, and this is very typical really of there where I live, it's the vehicles parked on part of the pavement and on the other side overhanging vegetation. So getting attacked by overgrown shrubs and having to go on the road in order to get from A to B. Certainly looking at the employment side of it, that we need to campaign for more employment to be available, educational as well, to open up more opportunities for people to study and get into college and universities. Also for us to be seen more, to be heard more. The RNIB was here for me from day one and is still here today. We're important members of the community. We are taxpayers and we've got to have a say and we've got to be behind the RNIB as well.
The Daily Connect podcast.
And hey, it's 5 days to go till Christmas, so we thought we'd end on a story courtesy of our listener, Giles.
The guest had only been checked in a minute or so before he'd been shown up to his room, and the landlord had gone back to his bar. His empty bar. And only minutes later, the guest came storming out like all the other guests, demanded his money back, and left and stormed out of the inn and continued down that long road between Moscow and Omsk. Even though it was midwinter, That guest, like all the others, would rather brave the road than stay a night in this landlord's inn. Once this inn had been thriving, had been bustling, had been busy. But now, it was overrun with rats. Guests had got snuggled into their beds and then shrieked because rats had run across their feet or bitten their faces. And then the word had got out, and the landlord had watched the rats eating all of his food, driving out all of his guests, and destroying his business. And that poor landlord was in despair. Soon he would have to close the doors forever. Deep midwinter was usually his busiest time, because all the drovers would be making that journey to the big city to sell the big cattle, lamb and sheep and beef, and they'd be driving them down the road, and they'd stop at his inn for the night. And the landlord, in the good times, had always loved to ask them, "What are you driving, sir? Big cattle or small cattle?" And he'd always loved to watch them leave the next morning, this long line of animals with one drover driving them. But now, they just went straight past him. Well, it was one night, and he was desperate. And from sheer gutsiness, I suppose, a desperate gasp of pride, he had made some beautiful, rich beef and beetroot soup, though he expected no customers. And there he was at the bar, stirring its beautiful purple-red, almost glass-like quality, the shine on it. It was a good borscht. And then, to his surprise, the door opened. And there in the doorway was a man with his huge white beard, stamping the snow off his boots and pulling his gloves off to rub the warmth back into his fingers. And he came up to the bar, and the landlord was astonished. He said, can I help you, sir? Would you like a room for the night? And the man laughed. No, I'm not stopping for the night. Well, can I offer you a bowl of soup or a glass of vodka? And the old man said, I would love to. I just came in for the warmth, but I have no money. And the landlord said, and I have no customers, so let me treat you to a bowl of borscht and a glass of vodka. Well, the old man accepted and said, thank you very much, and said, just out of interest, if I did have money, how much would this have cost me? Nothing more than 2 rubles. And the landlord said, are you driving big cattle or small cattle? And that man, with his big white beard, winked and said, small cattle. Anyway, I must be off now. And he left. And the landlord smiled as he left, and that smile faded as he said goodbye to what he thought was probably his last customer. And then there came a noise, a rushing, a scurrying, a squeaking, and then a great torrent of brown furry animals came running out of every single crevice. They jumped from behind the bar, they came from behind the optics, they came from under his feet. A great river of rats swarmed all over the floor of the pub and past the landlord and out of that door. And the landlord was astonished, the torrent of them. And then he ran out to sea, and he stood on the road, and he saw that old man with his white beard and his white hair being followed by a column of hundreds of hundreds of rats. And then he heard that voice saying, I told you, I was driving the small cattle. There were no more rats in that pub. They were gone. They never came back. And what's more, business after this, for some reason, was better than ever. People came flooding back. Torrents of guests came back, booking in, staying for extra, telling their friends. And suddenly that pub, that inn, was booming again. That year, that landlord did so well that he was able to fulfill every Russian's dream. And before beginning to farm it, he decided to go to the great cathedral to pray for good luck. And so he went to the great city, he went to the great cathedral, and there were all the icons, the paintings of the saints, there was the Holy Mother, there was the Holy Child. Now, he was looking for a particular saint, the patron saint of new ventures, Saint Nicholas. And he saw the icon of that beloved saint, an old man with a big white beard and a bit of a glint in his eye. And this man had a candle which he lit, and as all the other pilgrims did, he was pressing that candle into the trays of sand underneath the icons and getting ready to make his prayer. And as he pushed that candle into the sand, his fingers touched something. He investigated, and he found coins to the exact value of 2 rubles. He looked up at the icon in astonishment, and he swore it winked at him. And then he heard a laugh in his head. He heard, ho, 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 ho. and he realized who that old drover had been the day before his fortune changed. And he went back to his pub, realizing that, yes, Father Christmas can bring you things that you want, but sometimes, and perhaps this is more precious, he can take away the things you don't want. Happy Christmas.
That is it for our podcast today. We are back tomorrow, as always, 10 till 12 live and on the podcast after 5. See you then.
The Daily Connect Podcast.